Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some elements of science and physics, as well as other assorted topics, which will include, I presume, some element of how we can become more enlightened. Yes. Because tonight we're going to be talking about differences between spirit and light. And, of course, in order to do that, we have to know what spirit and light are, right? And they're very related. They are clearly related. And so let me start, as I usually do, by defining what I mean by spirit and light. Now, many people have listened to the show before, and some have read books and other things that I've written. And so they may know some of this. But tonight I'm going to try to bring it all together in a way that I have never written of to my recollection before, nor have I done a show quite like this. So this is going to be interesting for all concerned, including me. So, first of all, what do I mean by spirit? Spirit comes from one particular source. Not surprising. It comes from the mind of God, and it is the first two parts of God's mind. And I'll define those first two parts for you so you can understand them in pretty much plain English. I like doing things in plain English. No mystical stuff here. And that is that the first part of God's mind, which includes the following, is creation, creativity, purpose, okay, freedom. Yeah. And then we could add certain other parts of it, you might say, which would include will and choices, all that together. You see, it's hard for us to come up with a concept as large as God in one or two words. And these words mean something similar. They're related to each other, but they also have a whole bunch of realm of other aspects to them, so we kind of have to include at least that many to even get close. And we're not close, really. And the second part of God's mind the following words would be relevant, love in a more unconditional realm than most people might consider it, especially the kind that is more universally unconditional, so that's a really big kind of love. And then planning, givingness, inclusiveness, and when I say giving, I'm talking about the most wise form of giving. Kind that helps others to give wisely. And then another set of words that people sometimes use with the second part of God's mind is consciousness. Consciousness is the ability to be self-aware and the ability to take knowledge and apply it to new and greater things in a greater and wider perspective. That's another way to talk about consciousness. And then finally, another word which falls into the consciousness realm is understanding. So when someone says, yeah, I want to understand something, they're talking about the second part of God's mind. What happens when you take these two parts and put them together? All right, well, the first part, again, is this will and choices, and it applies to creation. But the second part has to do with direction, which is another word I didn't use, and consciousness, and implies that there is a direction or connectiveness to the creation or choices. So choices that have directedness or consciousness and that have a limitation on further choices in consciousness. And what do I mean by limitation? I mean these start adding together and they start reducing, in effect, the overall choices, but increases the size of them. Reduces the number, increases the size, all right? And when you put them together, we have a name for that. Yeah, the two together are called thought. Thought. So we have just defined thought in about in a couple of minutes. Wow! Holy cow, 5 minutes we defined thought and the first two parts of God's mind. That is going pretty cool. You know, it's like, holy wow, we're on a roll. Okay, so what's the next thing then? if we look at this from the standpoint that, wow, okay, we've got some very, we'll say, usable, I call them operational definitions for the stuff, then where does spirit fall into this thing? Well, spirit is the part of God's thought that requires senses or awareness connected to it in order to continue to think. So spirit is God's thought, but only when it is using awareness and has some sense. It is connected to the third part of God's mind, which we call, in some places, they call it intelligent action or interaction. And when intelligent interaction is less than perfect, that means when you have less than no mistakes, in our terminology, that by interacting in some way in our world with anything or something else, then the result is that you have energy. In other words, interaction that is less than perfect result kind of declines itself into becoming some form of energy. Wow. Isn't that something? Okay, so energy makes up bodies and awareness or senses. Without energy, you can't have senses, and you can't have energy except in a special case, which we're going to get to tonight. Okay, but in most cases, and when we talk about particularly human beings or life forms like us and less than us, then we've got to have energy for senses. That, and when it's very dense energy, like here in the physical world, then we call it mass or form. Okay. But that type of energy is still just a type of energy. For those of you who are familiar with physics, you'll smile and say, oh, sure, that's Einstein. Yeah, yeah. Energy and mass are interchangeable. But they're only interchangeable by a very special thing, and that is they have to be multiplied times the speed of light squared. Okay, that's a pretty strange thing. How did Einstein figure that one out? Well, tonight we'll find out. Oh, yeah, it's going to be in there. Yeah, so, you know, we're going to have some physics involved with this, but not anything heavy. You know, I'm not going to make this a big physics night, because some people love it, and a lot of people say, oh, God, not more science. That's hard stuff. And if I had a blackboard with numbers and math, I could make it more understandable for those of you who love that sort of stuff. And the rest of you would just hang up, okay, or if you were watching, which we're not doing yet anyway, you turn me off. Yeah, say, I'm going to go to some place that doesn't have math and numbers and guys talking about weird stuff. All right, so let's get back to our understanding of this thing. Now, I know some of you are always scratching your head saying, there's more. Yeah, there's more, but I'll try to take it slowly, and we're going to try to figure this thing out together. All right. So spirit is the part of God's thought that is required in order to think properly. It has to balance itself in a living form in life with energy or with intelligent activity. If the activity itself is perfect, woo, then you got spirit joining with intelligent activity. Otherwise, most of the time, it's just joining with some form of energy in a body with senses and all kinds of stuff. All right. That's the requirement. Why is it like that? Well, it's like that because God created it that way. It's a great method of challenging this thing we call life to the umpteen level of difficulty test of going through different dimensions of time and space where energy becomes more and more difficult to control with any kind of thought, and its own thought is more and more gravitational. It just wants to get bigger and hang on to itself. Well, when it does that, it doesn't want to hang on to us very easily, and we have to do everything we can just to keep a little energy inside of us to stay alive. That is why the lower dimensions of time and space are so much more difficult to live in. And guess where we are right now? We're in the basement. This is the most difficult place of time and space to live in. And so, So here we are, and our spirit, as an example, is having a very hard time trying to get the senses part of us, our energy that is in our senses, to correctly, correctly inform us of our environment so the spirit can think correctly and not be called a thing of illusion. And that all happening is what we're here to try to accomplish, so we can create the first part about God's mind in a way that is adding love into the system. We create, which is something new, and we add love, which is also something new, to the system, so that God's mind is growing in us, wow, or all kinds of life, we'll say, around us, while the spirit in us is becoming more and more something new. And the something new is light. Now we've got to talk about light. Yeah, well, this is the differences between spirit and light. We have to talk about light. Now, some of you might be saying, well, wait a second, isn't light God's thought? Yeah, light is God's thought when it is no longer using energy in any way to produce awareness. Oh, yeah, that's right. You see, spirit must use energy to create awareness. Light is the replacement for the need to use energy because, why? The energy in the bodies have become perfectly intelligently interactive with each other and with each body and with other people's bodies in space and time. And the result is they have become perfected in terms of the time and space the body is in. Wow. Now we see spirit becomes enlightened, and when it becomes enlightened, it no longer must depend upon using the energy in a body, because that energy is instantly changed through the thought of the spirit into a new form that was its original form in God of perfected intelligent activity. However, in God, the intelligent activity was not interactive because God, other than interacting with itself, existed alone to begin with. God invented the interactive side of its third part of its mind so that it could create something that would be independent in its thinking and independent in its actions from God. God chose this because it found that freedom that it gives to this other thing and the love that the other thing could choose to develop more of, remember you got to develop more love, allows the new thing to then grow and to eventually recognize its own creator, and it does that when it becomes human, and at that point it can take the reins, so to speak, and be in charge of its own existence. It's moving closer and closer to its own creator, and actually growing its creator while it grows itself, because God is the exponential growth of all of this thing, which is life. So God creates life to grow life, which it enjoys immensely, as it does, but it doesn't do it on its own. It gives the ingredients and creates the laws and physics and things in the universe so that life can choose to do it itself, and if it chooses to do so, it can do it in a way which eventually is first spiritual and then enlightened. And when it gets to that level, it is not only recognizing God, but it is co-creating more of God as a part of God, and God grows, of course, in the process. Grows exponentially because all the different zillions of forms of life, and especially human life and beyond, are growing God immensely fast, while the forms themselves and the spirit within the forms are growing relatively much stronger. So nothing can ever exceed God, because as it grows, along with everything else, God grows in exponential fashion of all life. But the odd thing about it is that it, as something becomes more and more, as its creator is, it is not just identifying God. It is actually being God on a scale closer and closer every time it creates more to its own creator. Wow. So this explains what the name of the show is, which is Why Life Is. Life is because God wants it to be so that it can grow, and it not doesn't want to just grow by being alone in itself. It wants to grow because the love it has for life, it wants life to have for both itself, for God, and for anything and everything that God is an expression of. In a weird way, God certainly loves humans and life forms, but it also enjoys the love we have for all those other life forms and us, as well as the eventual love, which comes fairly late in the process, but God doesn't care, of God itself. Because loving God is loving us and everything else. There's no separation here. It's really putting it all together. And if you understand this, some people say, oh, that's a selfish God. If it wants human beings just to love it, it's sort of like we're all going to get down and bow down to God. No, we haven't got it at all then. That's not what God wants. God wants us to love everything as it does. And in the process, we love God, and God loves us, and there is no separation. That's the whole point. Wow. Yet, there's a little bit of a twist to this whole thing. Each life form, eventually, when it's self-realized and when it can recognize God on its own and co-create with God on its own, is also developing a very special condition, and that's called individuality. So God doesn't want life forms that are just kind of like bees in a hive. That's one part of life, but it's not human life. God wants life that is individualized, because God itself started off being individual, and it wants all life to eventually, we'll call it evolve, but it's a created role, create itself into a greater and greater individual, while it is also participating with all other forms of life that choose to, like it is, and then it has group consciousness while it maintains an equal level of individual consciousness. And not surprisingly, the individual consciousness is much more related to the first part of God's mind, and the group consciousness is much more related to the second part. And when the two parts are equal and balanced, then you have a state that we call enlightenment. But it requires some other issues and other things. And it is not always true that there is a balance in very high life forms when enlightenment is reached. Oh. So that's what we're going to go into next, because it's kind of a little bit on the physics side. But we're going to go into it less from the science side and a bit more from the spiritual side. But nonetheless, there'll be some of both. Okay. So let's, one more time, I'll go through it real quick, but this time, but you may be able to follow me now that I've gone through this for this period of time. Okay. To begin with, God has two parts to its mind. The first part creates, it expresses freedom and wants freedom for everything and everyone. It is willful, chooses, and it makes those choices based upon its own will. The second part of God's mind is loving and consciousness and inclusiveness. It is the part that creates a direction, because it connects things together in ways that are similar, and that it sees similarities where there oftentimes are more differences than not. It's a very amazing part. We call that consciousness. The two, when they're joined together, produces thought. And when they're balanced together, for the most part, in humans and less, it produces God's thought. But in very advanced beings, it doesn't exactly do work that way, which we're going to get into. And the third part of God's mind is about activity, especially intelligent activity, when it's perfected and doesn't waste time. It doesn't separate time from space. So God itself lives in a timeless condition. We live in time because time is a result of separating energy from space, because the activities are not perfect. The more energy there is, the more time there is. Now, who discovered it? Albert Einstein did. This is kind of a strange thing. But some of his contemporaries worked on this problem as well. It wasn't just him. And what he discovered in a thing called the general theory of relativity was that gravity curves space and time. Okay, he knew that. He also discovered in a special theory of relativity, which came first, actually, is that time has a very odd kind of relationship to direction and speed. And he discovered that there is a high amount, a very high amount of energy, or very high, extremely high amount of mass, the results can be that time changes. Well, you didn't know that. Yeah, it's called time dilation. Now, the interesting part about this is that this was known about a long time ago. We're talking like 100-plus years ago. But most people, even today, have trouble with the concepts. It's not that we don't learn about it or can't read about it. It's just that in our illusion state here in the physical world, it doesn't fit our sense, our senses, because our senses are so illusion, we don't recognize these things as being true. We have to read about them and kind of think it through, but then we may not understand it very well. But we have to then go on a kind of trust thing. Well, I guess if Einstein thought it, it must be all right. Yeah. But, you know, it isn't that way. You can really think it through in thought experiments and otherwise. And then you can use math, which can kind of support it. But the main thing here, it's really fascinating about the science side, is that it actually fits the spiritual model that I'm describing to you today, which comes to us before recorded history. Let me repeat that. Before, like 7,000, 8,000 years ago, which is the earliest recorded anything, it's like 5,000 BC or so. Before that, there is verbal accounts and some smatterings of knowledge and stuff that we call ancient wisdom. And during that period of time and after, there's more obviously recorded time in history. People already knew this. How is it they knew it, and we first proved it in the mental sense just about 100 years ago? What is it? How did they come to this conclusion that energy has an effect on time and space and curves and all kinds of? What the heck is that all about? Where did they get that from so far long ago when, at least Albert as we know him, for the last century, Albert Einstein, hadn't yet told everybody about it, right? So, and who told him in the first place? Kind of figured it out, I guess. But the thing is that it's a fascinating idea, and this is why, in many cases, spiritual understandings have been far and away more developed than science has in terms of years past and basic understandings. All right, so getting to this model again, that is more than a model, it's pretty much accepted science these days. With a tremendous amount of energy, be it in the form of a physical mass, or in some other form, could even be a black hole, time is tremendously changed and dilated, meaning that there's more time on one side than there is on the other side of where the energy lies, and the results are you have a thing called time dilation between one side of time and space. and the other. Wow. Is that not fascinating? I find it fascinating. So you come up to a black hole and a thing called an event horizon, which is the point at which you're not going to escape the black hole. And on one side of the event horizon, we're having time moving in a certain way. Actually, it's going, it's going by at a certain rate. And you get into the black hole, and time completely changes. And you can be going through a whole lifetime, as time on this side is moving. So it's a real amazing kind of experience. And that means that people in higher dimensions of time and space actually don't use up time as much like we do, and they have a lot more time to live in. So by our standards, now this may confuse you, by our standards, they have much more time to live in the same period of time that we live in here. To us, they're moving much faster, that means, if we could see them. And it might be dizzying to even try to do that. From my perspective, to them, we are moving much slower because we have separated more time from space here. Because, again, we're more illusions, and energy is much more impactful in this dimension than it is in the other dimension. So in our dimension here, there's much more density of energy, and there's mass. There's actual physical things. Those things don't exist beyond this dimension of time and space. And so we have a different time. Whoa, that's kind of interesting. That's why when you hear about the astral world, people can live hundreds of years there, but in only 30 to 50 years here. Many hundreds of years there, 30 to 50 years here. That's the average, and it changes from circumstance to circumstance. Some people only live a few of our Earth years here, and others live maybe 50, 60 at most of our Earth years here. And when they do, they're in different parts of even the astral dimension. And beyond the astral, there's mental. So it gets more and more extreme as you become more extra-dimensional. Why does dimension change it? Because with each added dimension of time and space, a thing called the quantum constant is becoming much greater. And thought is affecting energy in vastly greater ways. So it's a very scientifically, we'll say, technical way of understanding it. Some people don't like that explanation, so let me put it in a more spiritual term. People, when they can live in ways that they're less illusioned, have a better sense. Spirit thinks better. It has more control over its senses and bodies and that of everything else around it, and that is energy. And it can mostly create things just by thought, and at least the kind of thought that exists, that's available to it, where it's at. And its life is much easier. It's kind of a grace, because life has a... When it's easier to live, it can be, in some respects... more successful experience, because you don't make as many what we call mistakes. A mistake is really just increasing the amount of energy it takes to do anything. Forces produced from all the energy cause us to suffer from the results, and we say, oh, gee, mistakes, wasted time, and lost time. That's all the more, we'll call it, spiritual explanation. Comparison to the scientific, I just described the same thing in two different ways. All right, so looking at our whole spectrum of the differences between spirit and light, what happens when a person chooses that their awareness will equal their consciousness? Well, when they choose that their awareness will balance or become as great as their consciousness, which means the information they take in, they will use to create the information and eventually knowledge they take in. Well, they will use and create to increase their understanding at the same level of information input. So So the more information you have, the greater your level of understanding. The two stay equal to each other, and as long as you can do that, which is a huge thing, by the way, the result is the spirit that is inside of us becomes enlightened. Okay, I'm going to repeat that again, but I'm going to say it in a little different way. You ready? Okay. When we choose to spiritually discipline our senses, when we choose to live in a way that we want to get closer to our Creator, and our actual objective is to do that, because this is usually not done very much on an accidental level. So it's sort of like, this is something you have to consciously choose to do. When we do that, then we are converting the information that eventually becomes connected together, and the information is connected together in a reasonable, logical way that all fits the mental spectrum of our thinking, then we call that knowledge. Okay? When we can collect knowledge and hold on to it and use it at will, we have reached that point in our development, which humans have, that we can now take the knowledge and we can apply it to what? We can apply it to our full understanding of what the knowledge means. We understand it. Lots of people have knowledge, but they can't connect the knowledge together to have greater and greater understanding of the universal movement. Those people who spiritually discipline themselves in some fashion, whether they think that's what they're doing or not, and they may not know it, they are doing this because they want to have greater understanding. And they may call it, I'm choosing to be more understanding or more conscious, but at the same time, another word for that is I'm choosing to be more spiritually disciplined and more spiritually aware as well. So that's what's going on. And when we choose to do that, we are becoming enlightened. Now, what is that about? Because now we have to get to, what does it really mean to become enlightened? Well, once that happens, some part of us has perfected some intelligent activity and has created some intelligent activity, I should say, which is perfect activity. And there's less energy involved in our activities, which creates forces, by the way. So our life becomes less and less forceful, okay, more and more effortless, including our thinking, because it's the spirit in us that's doing the thinking. So the spirit now says, gee, it's very easy to think. I can't imagine how easy. But in thinking, we also are increasing our consciousness. Every step of the way in this process, we're increasing our consciousness. Now, consciousness is the second part of spirit. And it's the part that balances out in spirit its individuality. So we're becoming group conscious while we are continuing to grow in individuality, and the two are kind of matching each other. Very interesting point. And who or what does that? Well, the part of us that does that is called our soul. It wants to balance all these parts of God, the three parts of God, within itself. And it needs to have a balance to begin with, to even be a soul, between the awareness part of it and, we'll call it, the creative side of it, which is the first part of light. But then it has to continue to grow in understanding or consciousness. As it grows in consciousness in a human being or any life form, we become much closer to our career. And the spirit in us becomes what we call enlightened. Wow. And so the difference between spirit and light is spirit that is not enlightened is connected to awareness that is illusioned and that doesn't work perfectly, creating a lot of energy. And the energy starts creating forces. What is a force? A force is one energy against another because the direction of the two energies are not going in the same way. What makes things go in the same direction? Consciousness. Remember, consciousness produces direction to creation. So when we become more conscious, we improve the directiveness or the direction of the energy as it's moving, we have less forces, and the energy automatically, over time, becomes more and more perfected, thus leading to intelligent activity. Now, some of you are going, oh, man, my head's on fire. That's too much. I can't take any more of this. Okay, all right, let's... This, remember, the first part of the show, the first 39 minutes or so, I burn your brain out because I tell you about all the definitions, some of the science. I'm explaining a lot of the underlying reasons for the remainder of the show, which usually deals with more practical aspects or applications of what I'm talking about in this very highly conceptual 39 minutes, you know. But those 39 minutes are important because you can go back and listen to this anytime you want. And if you don't get it the first time around, many people won't because it's a little bit hard and it's a lot fast. 39 minutes is not much time if this is relatively new to you. You're going, huh? What did he say? It kind of makes sense, but I got to think about that for at least 15 or 20 minutes before I even go down the next sentence, he said. Well, you can do that because you can choose to re-listen to any of the parts of the show over and over again until you can understand it. You also can drop me a line. I mean, I'll even talk to you on the phone. Whatever it takes to help you understand it, that's what I'm around for. But so you got lots of options to being able to understand this. You don't have to get it the first time around. If you even get some percentage of it, I'll be really happy because I don't expect everyone's going to understand this. By the way, pretty hard concepts, because they're huge concepts. But they all fit together nicely in a beautiful package. And I call it God's plan. This is it. And it's the plan for God's growth, which is why life exists. So now we're starting to put this whole thing together. It starts making some sense. And it is not that hard to understand. If maybe you write it down even as you hear it. Oh, so he means it this way, and it isn't that way. And eventually you'll say, yeah, this thing kind of does fit together, right? It's not really as cuckoo as it originally sounds. And it's a little hard to understand, and maybe that's why some people might scoff at it and say, ah, that guy is some ranting, raving lunatic on the radio. Not exactly. Okay, so we've got some differences between spirit and light because spirit is the beginning process in God's plan. Light is the result of spirit that has found the direction of God's thought and has decided that that's the direction it's going to take and is able to manage to control the senses or the body that it is informing to create life. As long as it's able to do that, we say that the spirit is on the road of enlightenment. Hey. And light is the natural state of moving towards, especially as we grow in consciousness. And the whole system in God's plan is to have consciousness eventually equal creation and freedom. And then we're going to get into a whole bunch about that and a bunch more in a practical sense later in the show. So we're going to go to break right now. This will just be about 2.5 minutes. And then when we come back, I'll finish some of this about spirit and light, and then we'll move into some of the practical applications of what the very difficult parts have been of today's show.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yeah, tonight we're talking about differences between spirit and light. And, you know, this show, I realize, has been kind of a little bit testing on your ability to follow it as quickly as I'm going through these concepts. These are big concepts. I can almost guarantee by the end of the show, it'll make a lot more, we'll say, impact and sense, because you start seeing that there's a real practical side to all of these, you know, kind of far-out concepts. But for right now, just bear with me if you can. All right, so we kind of gotten to the point now where we're talking about light. What is this light business anyway, and why it's used so often everywhere, got to be enlightened. Light of God, this light, that light, everything a light. Okay, why is it so important? Well, because light is the, we'll call it, perfected state in each of the seven dimensions of time and space that God has chosen to create as our universe. So there's a different kind of light with a different direction and a different number of we'll call it dimensions, that the light inhabits. So it's a more complex light as you go closer to God's native state, which is in a place called the Logoic plane, the plane of Adi, which means the One. But it's like the first, greatest, and unified part of the universe. But it doesn't exist in the physical universe because we're in the lowest or seventh plane of the universe. And these planes have like seven subplanes. And so, I mean, they're not exactly solid in their, we'll say, uniqueness. They're less than solid, actually. They have variances because they're subparts based upon the seven parts of God's mind apply to each one of the planes, more visible by far in the planes higher than the physical. In the physical, everything kind of gets crunched down and so tightly compacted, it's hard to tell one from the other. Where it's easiest to tell some difference in the physical is between the etheric or electromagnetic part of the physical world. We know about that. Oh, those are radio waves and X-rays and, yeah, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And then, beyond that, the denser parts, which we just call the physical universe, where I'm talking to you from right now, right? And so, and where most of you are listening from, I assume, right now. But then there's the part that is light, right? So let's take an example. In the physical part of the universe, where we are, it's kind of split in two by our definitions, and so we can see two parts. There's really seven, but we don't notice the other divisions as easily. And then, at the very, we'll say, the most together part of the physical universe, there's light. Yeah. In a f- physical sense and in metaphysical sense, it's the same thing. Light exists at the same place in space-time, and it's really at the place where the, we'll call it, the direction of light is most connected to the choices, will, creation that light is all together in one place. And that's really what we identify as light. Is light a physical thing? Does it light things up? Yeah, it does. It provides us in a sensual sense the ability to collectively pull things together through sight, as you know, and through sight, which is one of the seven senses, it allows us to be able to quickly, in the most quick of the five senses that we use, there's two others that have to do with God, but the five senses that we have, it allows us to join together things in time and space in the fastest way possible because we're using light to do it, and that's what we call vision. Not all things have great vision, and some things in our life have no vision. And you could say, well, then they must not be very enlightened. Correct. What about blind people? Are they enlightened? Well, they could be, because vision, there's an inner vision that we develop besides the external. If we lose our external vision, sometimes the inner vision actually can make up for some of it. And the inner vision really comes from places, senses that make up for the loss of the sense of sight. Kind of interesting. Sense of sight comes from the brow or center sense between the two eyes. And that center or sense is called a chakra. The organs that it produces are our eyes. Every sense comes from a chakra, which then produces a organ or a series of organs, sometimes collected together as one, but still, we may at the present time identify each one of them as collectively together, but they are. And the result is that our whole body is composed of these seven chakras with hundreds of minor ones. The seven chakras being major ones means that we can consciously use the sense to build more consciousness. You cannot use a minor sense to do that. It's not connected to consciousness. But the major chakras, you can. So we have seven major chakras. Two of them, the heart chakra and the head chakra, have to do with God. The heart chakra helps us to develop the love of God or consciousness of God and what it is doing and why it is doing what it's doing in our universe. And then the first, we'll call it chakra, which is the head or crown chakra. That one allows us to find new ways to create more of God in a co-creative sense. It's a fascinating thing. When you put the two together, you get enlightenment. Wow. So that's how you build enlightenment, but you can't build enlightenment without the other five senses working very well, because garbage in, garbage out kind of theory. If you have too many senses that are feeding us misinformation, then what we think we're doing and growing more of God becomes illusionary and wrong. Even though we might have the right motive, we do the wrong actions. Wrong actions produces separation of time and space and produces more energy that is not in the same direction, which produces more forces, and our lives become forceful and difficult, and we suffer due to a lack of consciousness. And a growth. Wow. Let's talk about this business of consciousness in general so we can better understand what that means. Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about light now so that you can have a basis for it. Some of this is covered in Life's Hidden Meaning. Some of it is only alluded to, so the reader has to figure it out. Because I didn't want to give everything away just doing the first book, Got to kind of save something. But I did talk about this, and that is that light is not balanced to begin with, even in God, because God chooses to separate itself so life can exist. Otherwise, there would be no freedom for us to think on our own. So it created a universe in which 4/7 of light is in the first type of God's thought, which is that part that's creative, and it's willful, and it makes choices, and it has a huge number of features to it. Sometimes it has to be destructive to get rid of things that aren't good or godlike. It also has a vast number of other qualities to it. 4/7 is that way. 3/7 in God's chosen structure is developing in consciousness. So 3/7 of light has consciousness to it in its native form. That's how God created our universe. And those 3/7 have to do with inclusiveness and even the thing I'm doing maybe right now, which is teaching and helping people to understand. All of that is in these 3/7. That makes 7/7. That's what light is. Put together, that's the original condition of God's nature. Well, you say, well, there's something wrong here. In order for life to become enlightened, you have to have an equal amount of consciousness to creation. Isn't that right? Yes. That's why the system is set up this way, so that you aren't born enlightened. You're born unenlightened in some respects, depending upon how much you choose to discipline yourself and create more light. So, interestingly, in order to achieve this enlightened state, we have to go beyond where God was. We have to create more of God. And we have to create it through the second part of God's mind, not the first. This is the strange thing about it. We use the first part to create more of ourselves in an individual sense. We use the second part of God's mind to help others create more of themselves, the way God thinks. Now, when you increase the second part of our consciousness to equal the amount that we are creative, then we become more enlightened. And that's the key. That's the secret to the entire system. And a lot of people don't understand this very simple explanation, unfortunately. I'm not sure exactly why, because it seems relatively simple. But one of the things I've noticed in reading books in my past, mostly, many hundreds of them, actually, is that these books were on spirituality, metaphysics, and the like. It turns out that most people never understand the most basic things, like what light is, and they don't get the whole concept. They know a lot of people know that there's 7 different kinds of light, and the 7 kinds make up all of the different dimensional aspects of God, and they have that part down, but they don't know or don't understand that there's really, or they do in some respects, understand that 4 are kind of this odd part of God's mind, or sometimes people call it masculine, and then the other part has 3/7 of the feminine side. Nobody pays attention to that. It's like, well, it's just the way he made it, you know. I guess it must be his idea of doing it, or her idea of doing it, or its idea of doing it, depending upon what they think of God. But unfortunately, they don't recognize that this was done so life can grow. And if it wasn't done this way, the universe would come to a crashing halt. Why life is would make no sense, because the reason for life to exist is to grow, so it could become eventually a part of its creator and grow more of it. And that's what God loves and wants. So, but none of this would make any, wouldn't make any sense if you had an equal amount to start with, because then where do you go from there? You see, the imbalance is created at the beginning. Starts to make some sense. And then it dawns on you. Holy cow. All this time I've been reading all these crazy books and they've been talking about this stuff, but I never realized it. Yep. I could say, yeah, but you wrote that book. I said, meaning, you kind of said something like this. It wasn't in that chapter 3 or something. You talked about light and you said that The first part of light is actually always a little larger than the second part, unless you change it yourself. Didn't you say something like that? Yeah, I did. Oh, that's why you said that. Yeah. So light, in its native state, as God created it, is not balanced. God chose it not to be balanced. Its quote-unquote feminine side is a bit, 1/7, less than its masculine side. And then that's why, possibly, in many people's thought process, but not all by any stretch, God is a male. Now, you know, there's a lot of other reasons for this in terms of our backgrounds of historical issues and recorded time, because there's more masculinity in the process, partly because at the present historical time, males have been in a dominant position. It hasn't always been that way, but in recorded time it has. So, interestingly enough, this also adds to it. So there's a sociological factor, but there's a basis for it that goes beyond sociology. It has to do with the nature of God to help the universe to grow and to make sure, almost a certainty, that there will be growth and that life will be constantly in this dilemma to increase its consciousness in order to become closer to its creator. Now, what about evil, as an example? Well, evil is pretty stupid, you can say, because it wants to destroy its creator. It also wants to destroy the growth of life. Talk about dumb. Because, you see, it is a part of the growth of life, right? So anything it does ultimately destroys itself. Well, evil hasn't got that down right, you see, yet. So it thinks it can get around that one somehow. But the bottom line of it is that evil lacks consciousness, and it doesn't understand that it is here to co-create with its creator. Instead, it says, I'll use that first-rate part to be a destroyer. I will destroy God, or I'll deny its existence, or try to get others to be convinced of its non-existence. And so that's where it's coming from. And why is it doing that? Because it wants to increase its individuality, its sense of being special to itself, anyway, while it increases its power or the ability to change others and to destroy or force others to do what it seeks, be in control. While it doesn't want to destroy its consciousness, but it doesn't care if it grows anymore, because it doesn't think that consciousness is going to do much for it anyway. Consciousness, it just sees in some kind of a general state of weakness. And it doesn't want to lose anything. It doesn't want to lose consciousness. But it doesn't mind if it has to, provided it can gain more in power and more in creation of whatever it wants, which might be including destruction of some forms of life. But the problem is that it goes against God's plan for the universe. And you can bet your bottom dollar that if you bet on that one, you're going to lose. Why is that? Because God created the universe in a way that the cards are stacked. You can't win the game. How do you like that? Yeah. And you say, well, wait a second, you said everything's free. Well, if evil's free, why can't it win? Well, I said everything's free to reject or accept God. It doesn't mean that you're free to win the game. It doesn't mean you're free to destroy God. It doesn't mean you're free to destroy other forms of life. You're not free to do that. You're free to attempt to do it. You could try it. But the system is designed so you will fail. All evil will fail. How come that's true? Because ultimately, for evil to increase, continue to increase in its power, and to continue to grow in its ability to create destruction, there has to be more things and more things it can destroy, which eventually it starts limiting. And in addition, it can't lose its consciousness below a certain point, because if it does, it won't be able to think well enough to do any of the things that gives it its ability to maintain some semblance of what it means to be a human in the life mission. Because only humans are faced with the dilemma of the only. So here is the fascinating part about this, and it really is true. The system is designed so that eventually, due to a lack of consciousness and to an imbalance in the race structure and increases in forces beyond the ability to steal energy from others, eventually reach a point of no return, and then you lose your senses and you lose your ability to maintain who you are. You lose a lot of yourself in the process, but you have enough to still be somewhat conscious of the destructive things you've done, and not conscious enough to hurt or destroy most other things any longer. That's what the process leads to. It may take a million years, but eventually all evil ends up in the same condition. And you thought God didn't care. You might say a million years is a long time, and why would God give us so much time? Because we are given freedom. Even evil is given freedom. Some evil turns itself around. Some evil doesn't. But eventually, God's system works on everyone. There are no failures. There are just detours from success. It is a heck of a system. As a matter of fact, I'm so thrilled to tell you about this. Because no matter what religion you really have or believe in, or if you don't believe in any of that, whatever, this will make some sense to you, because every religion has some elements of what I'm telling you in it. It's just that it's been hid, because religions are really made by human beings. They have many failings. They have a lot of the misunderstandings of human beings built into them. And so some of them go off track. They're not very accurate. But the basis of what I'm telling you are in, to some extent, most religions. And when you get them in their pure form, and they seem more and more the same, they really do. So you just have to go past the individual variations from one religion to another. Fascinating stuff. I love it. I'm hoping that you're finding this to be interesting. All right. So, what do we got? Well, the situation is such. The dice are stacked. Holy cow, this whole thing's been planned out and done, and there's no way around it. No matter how evil you become, no matter what else you try to do, the whole thing's going to turn out okay. Now, I know some people find that one difficult to believe, particularly here on Earth. Well, Earth is a special case. We have a lot of bad things here because it was designed to be an experiment and to see how to overcome certain hideous forms of mental expression of evil. It's unfortunate, but that's true. And guess what? Everybody who's listening to me, including me, chose to be here. Now, we didn't choose while we were here to do it because we're too far in the illusion. We chose when we were back into being the consciousness of our own soul. And in that state, believe it or not, we choose to stay here and continue to go through what I call incarnation and live here again. And you can go through hundreds of these incarnations. But we don't remember most of them because in order to have memory, psychologists know that you need to have integrity of memory, which means you have to remember 60% or more of any occurrence that's connected to the memory that makes it a memory. And most people don't have that from one lifetime to the next. In order to remember that level, you have to have a very high level, almost 60%, of consciousness. And most people don't have anywhere near 60% in consciousness. Not even close. We're in the single-digit ranges. So the problem is that in any one life, you're not understanding enough of what that life was and is about. Even after you die from the physical world, your understanding isn't great enough. So you just don't remember the life. because of that. If you increase your understanding, you'll start remembering your lifetimes. I remember some of my lifetimes and some things about them. I don't remember everything because I don't have the 60% consistently every minute, every day of every life. But enough, okay. But that's me. And if you say, well, I must be a real dummy, I don't got no consciousness. Now, most people don't remember virtually anything. You know who remember the most? Children under the age of 7. Why? Because they're more conscious? Well, in some ways, small ways, yes. They're more conscious or more loving in some aspects of their existence. But the reason they can remember it, and this is the strangest thing, is their personality hasn't formed yet to any significant level. And the personality is so selfish that immediately, as soon as it comes fully on board, it causes the person to drop in consciousness or understanding. Isn't it weird? So in our very young years, we actually can be more conscious than as we go past it into later childhood and early adolescence, our consciousness drops to some extent for most people because the difference is that we have to start using more and more of what we call consciousness or we lose it. And most people don't use it enough. If your children are raised with this model and you help to raise their consciousness, good chance they're going to continue to remember some things about past lives even as they grow older. How do I know, what I'm saying is true? Because all you got to do is ask a room full, say, go to kindergarten, of kids at 5 years of age. Who here remembers when they were living someplace else and doing something else, and they were actually adults? Watch the number of hands that go up. You're really surprised with the question. And you'll say, and of course, well, what do you think about that? Well, I told my parents about it, but they think it's a fantasy and I'm just making it up. Do you actually have some kind of memory? Yeah, I remember this or that. I don't know why. Nobody listens to me. Of course, people don't listen because they don't believe it because they've already grown past that point. I could call this the Peter Pan effect, really. And there's a lot of truth to it if you've worked with kids, and I have. And it's amazing how many actually have some memories of their very last life and sometimes even earlier ones. But they just slip away as they grow older. And they learn very early at age not to talk about it because the reaction by parents is, oh, my God, my kid's going crazy. He's talking about some life. He was an adult? This kid doesn't even have an idea what an adult is. How could that be? Okay, gotcha. All right, so all of this is going on, and we're trying to still figure out spirit and light. I know. We're going to get to that more and talk about it in practical sense. I'm going to give you a cool-down period. How's that? A couple of minutes here, you can go, talk about something. Well, that's just esoteric. It's too much for me. All right, I will. I'll tell you about it. You got some pains? Do you? Most people have pains because they develop aging in their bodies, mostly in the physical, etheric physical, and it's caused by forces from, well, you got it, a lack of enlightenment, too much spirit that is living in the darkness of the dense energies of the physical body. What can you do about it? Well, the physical body stays alive because the energy that I'm talking about is in movement most of the time and doesn't sit in one place, confined, and or fills in most of the gaps or spaces where there's a depletion of it due to either force or excessive use. This energy is called chi, the energy of life. It is the first, or Pingala, energy of Kundalini, and it comes from the earth, but it originates in a very, very high dimension of time and space where spirit and energy first become existent. It's kind of brought down very quickly by the earth itself, to help life grow in this dense physical world. And chi is a great energy when it is balanced. Just like I was saying, you balance thought, you have to balance the energy in the body to the thought, and chi is the energy that is the great balance. When chi encounters any kind of spiritual thought, it immediately responds by helping to balance other energies that it works with and through, called devonic energies, so that the energies that are very gravitational, called elemental types or forms of energy, that don't respond very well to anything, are more manageable and helpful in the body. Qi is the energy that is the resource to making this all happen. And it works with another energy called prana from the sun that allows our bodies to literally become self-balancing. If the qi and your prana are balanced together, you'll live a very long life and be healthy. Prana is one of those things that most people cannot control very easily, but qi is an energy that they can change around to match the prana without having to deal with prana directly. Usually prana is, because prana, it comes from light, it's only able to be dealt with by beings that have more enlightenment than not, and they're usually called super beings or masters, or those about to become masters. Only those folks can deal with prana directly, because it's a form of light. Whereas chi is a form of energy, and it's one of the first of the kundalini energies of life, and it is still a very, we'll call it, fine kind of energy, because it really has some qualities of the physical or etheric physical world mixed with the atmic world. Wow. Together. So this energy is very creative of life. It's actually called the energy of life because the atmic world is where life begins, at least spiritual life. So it's a very important factor. How do you deal with this energy when it gets out of kilter? Well, we came up with, me and some others, came up with a science of balancing the qi energy in your body, especially two pranic energies when they themselves are somewhat out of balance. And this qi energy can be balanced by using the qi in special plants called herbs and certain other nutraceuticals, a couple that come from still plant sources in general. These energies, we'll call them 63 kinds, that are in herbs, that are qi energies, are specialized, and they help remedy some of the imbalances in the centers in living things. There are a lot of different kinds, because some work on one type of center more than another, and when you put them all together in the correct way, they can cure, or at least, let's say, help, treat, and support various parts of the body and help us to feel much better. The products that we make, this, we call this Phi Chi science. And when it's when we make them, they come from a company called Phi Chi Formulas. And the product that I'm referring to in dealing with pain is called Phi Chi Jizik. Phi Chi Jizik works on this system that I just described. And for most people, but not all, it helps to balance the energy. Now, you might say, well, why doesn't it work on everybody? Well, some people smoke cigarettes or use other kinds of destructive elements that overcome some of the herbs, because it's like toxic waste you're putting in your body. And if you drink a lot of alcohol or use drugs, and smoke, you're going to have a very difficult time getting Phi Chi to work for you, because there's sort of a momentum. You have to get the energy moving. Some places don't have enough. They need more, and other places have too much, and they're just clogging up the works. Phi Chi will normally balance it for most people who are living a pretty fairly healthy lifestyle. But if you've got a lot of other issues and problems, it just may not work for you. But the good news is if it doesn't work, it doesn't cost anything because you just send it back. If it does work, it's on sale right now, $30 a bottle. And that's for the big bottle. If you want a trial size, you can get that for $12.95. Either way, it's worth a try because you got nothing to risk. Some people are using this. It's literally allowing them to, it's saving their life so that they can do more and serve more in a lot of different ways. It's a very important kind of science. It is the future of what I call esoteric medicine. But what the government says is called a supplement. Well, we'll call it whatever you want to call it. And if it works, that's all that matters, right? All right, let's come back to our subject today. You notice how I kind of put that in with the show topic, which is good. I mean, that way we can, you know, keep thinking about what we're talking about, even though it's kind of about some product, you know, which is cool. I mean, having a product is okay. It's nice to have a product that will do this sort of thing. All right, tonight we're talking about the differences between spirit and light. Get back into the enlightenment process, because that's really where the ticket is, right? If you can enlighten yourself, you can get the extra consciousness you need to balance the light in your body that produces this extra enlightenment. Otherwise, you're stuck with what God started with, and believe it or not, that doesn't keep you going very long. I know it's hard to understand this, but the life expectancy of a person who does no enlightenment of their body is 49 years or less. Now, that's not very good. That has to do with 7 times 7. It's a whole explanation of the 7 forms of life, the 7 forms of light affecting each body, and it's kind of complicated. But the main thing here is it's 49. And so if you make it past 49, you're probably doing good. Now, 49 and 11 months is still 49. Some people have a hard time balancing because they may have a lot of what is called fourth ray in them, which is the fourth kind of light. But that light only works well when the person is balanced. And since the nature of this whole process is an imbalanced state while you're physically alive, those folks have a very hard time living very long. There's a higher mortality rate presently. But guess what? That fourth ray kind of stuff is going to get easier to do now, and people get a better sense of it. So life expectancy should go up for them. That's the good news. Very good. How do you increase the light? Well, spiritual discipline is definitely part of it. Chapter 12, for those of you who have read the textbook, Life's Hidden Meaning. And listen to some of the shows. I've had a lot of shows on how to build more light in the body. What is the goal, though, in looking at it? It's done through spiritual discipline. What does that get you? Where do you go to if you do all the stuff I talk about, which I'm not going to really go into tonight as far, because that would be a whole other show on how to do spiritual discipline. But think of it this way, and it's not that hard to understand it, that for most of us, we live in a world, a physical world, where forces are just all around us all the time. And that's because we haven't balanced our consciousness to be able to use the information and knowledge we get from our senses. And therefore, we are illusioned in the knowledge that we have. To overcome this in a general fashion is not just spiritual discipline, although that is the method that's proven and chosen and used. It also comes from we'll call it an attitude of life. When human beings reach the point where they say, I think I got it, I'm here to become a greater part of God, I'm in illusion, which makes me selfish, I accentuate too much of the first part of God's mind, which makes me want to be more of an individual, and not enough of the second part of God's mind to balance it, which makes me group conscious or soul consciousness, and the result is that I become selfish. There's a part of me called the personality that as it grows up to and past age 7, I lose more consciousness than I gain as I function just through this part of myself. So how do you overcome that? Well, there is a way. Besides spiritual discipline, you could become more loving. And some religions have actually taken that stand. In other words, they don't rely upon the intellectual, we'll call it, side of things, and they reject the Gnostic elements, which is the knowledge elements, to find God. They say, just love more, and that in itself will solve a lot of the problems. And there is a truth to that, except those religions have lost what the meaning of love is. They think love is very simply giving. Well, nothing could do you in faster than giving in the most wrong of ways. If you give for your own self-advancement, if you give for your own self-edification, or if you give only for the advancement and edification of individuals around you, you end up with a system that is destructive to consciousness. Wow! Yeah. So giving in and of itself is not the answer. You must give wisely, and the word wisely means in ways that grows your consciousness while it grows the consciousness of those you're giving to, which means they have to become wise givers themselves. That kind of giving increases consciousness for all around, and the results are phenomenal. But most religions that started off a little bit like that fail to grow like that due to political reasons and other factors, because the people who created the religion want to still be in control of everybody or whatever else they may have as a motive. And so the fact of the matter is that the whole thing kind of falls apart. And that's the problem. So love alone will not work. All you need is love. It's not the right tune. What you need is wise love that balances the wisdom with the giving. So the wisdom is making sure that others are wise as you give to them through the giving process. If you give to others and you make them dependent upon you, like a welfare state, or you make them slaves to you, like maybe a communist or a socialistic system can become, or you make them into some kind of, we'll say, copy of you, giving up freedom for some kind of quote-unquote fake belief in consciousness. If you do all that, those results are going to be tantamount to suicidal consciousness, the destruction of your own consciousness. And if you choose to create in ways that are loving for others, that helps them to become more giving themselves in similar ways, it doesn't happen the same way, by the way, the results can be tremendous increases in consciousness. Most religions don't have this right. It's a problem. Too much of the time, the giving side of the religion, which originally had it right in some cases, went way wrong because it's too simplistically understood with a poor grasp on the real understandings. This is unfortunate, but true. So you need to avoid those kinds of behaviors and instead substitute wise giving. Wise giving is huge. It's giving as a soul gives, helping others to be souls themselves. It's a big deal. And when you do it, the result is joy. If you do it very consistently, the result is bliss. Holy. So this is a great, great system, and you don't have to, literally, you don't have to get into all the technical science of spiritual discipline yet. You can kind of go around the edges of it, just try to give wisely and not necessarily have to get into the fully didactic, like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, one sense at a time. And like, yeah, all that stuff is true, but for people beginning out, that may be too difficult for them, and they may not fully understand it enough to do it without a teacher or somebody helping them along, honestly. So a little easier assignment, a little easier thing would be to just literally give wisely. Because remember, eventually we have to balance the light. We have to balance the spirit, I should say, producing light. And light itself is still in its native form from God who created this universe, a light that's 4/7 out of balance with the 3/7 of consciousness. The 4/7 is creation. So by nature, humans are selfish. Even when we try to work within the light of God, even when that God is fully known to us, it will not work. If God stood on a soapbox and could direct everything that we are from its native consciousness as it existed before the universe was created, we would not gain consciousness in a balanced way. How do you like that? And God did this deliberately so that God could grow, because we are forced in this system through forces and other missions to change this nature we are given. Now, does that mean that we are by nature evil or bad? No. I don't want you to think that. Some religions have gone down that path because they took the scholars of those religions that knew something of angels' wisdom, took some of this information I'm telling you tonight and misapplied it. And then they give the wrong interpretation that by nature, humans are born with sin. Yeah. And this sin cannot be expunged away unless you accept the God that they tell you exists, in the way that it exists. And if you don't, then the God sometimes becomes punitive towards you, and bad things will happen to you. Well, of course, none of that's true. What really is true is that if you follow that path, you will experience more forces in your life due to the science of karma and the way forces work, one energy against another, because you're creating more and more energy instead of intelligent activity, et cetera, all the stuff we talked about earlier in the show. And your spirit inside of you is not becoming enlightened in enough of a way to balance the amount that is going dark. And then that causes you to suffer. And it also results into very, we'll say, not so great experiences in living, especially here in the physical world. It gets better in the astral world, and by the time you reach the middle, you got the thing kind of figured out. But then it's too late, because you can't create where God wants creation the most and where it's needed the most, which is here in the physical world, where it's so hard to do so. So you kind of keep, every lifetime, you lose some of the opportunity. That doesn't mean you lose all of it. You get better from one life to another in general, but some do fall in the backwards mode. And it's up to us to decide how that's going to go. Wow, this is an interesting idea, huh? So, okay, how else can we then solve this if there's some built-in problems that a lot of people actually are following? Why are they doing it? They go to church maybe once to 3-5 times a week, and what happens is they're getting misinformed. Because the system that they're in, and there's a lot of different ones, and they have different names too, is misapplying what used to be ageless wisdom, and it's confused. Well, the first thing to do is to check out or challenge what I'm saying in tonight's show. If it's all true, you can figure this out in a few days to a week or so to see in your own life whether it's correct. Because I'm giving you reasons for everything I'm saying. You can set up little thought experiments. Some of them can look back in time, if you remember well enough, and others can be about what's going to happen in the near future, so you can really see whether or not what I'm saying is accurate. If it turns out accurate for you, then you can say, hey, I can start doing some of the stuff this guy's talking about because it works. And it works without being forced to do it. You choose to do it when you realize where the truth lies. And the truth lies within your own mental mind, which is part of God's mind. Wow. So that's what this show is trying to do. It's trying to help you to achieve more mental truth so that you can help others to do the same. It's not trying to indoctrinate you or convince you to even leave your religion. Some people say, oh, I'm afraid I won't be practicing this religion. Now, your religion probably has a lot of these ideas in it. They're just a little confused. As you learn these things, you could share them with others. You can help them to continue in the religion, but in a way that's more enlightened. You might slightly change the religion here and there, but it's not going to cause any great catastrophes. If really what you're aiming for is more enlightenment, which means thinking more as God thinks, but in the present sense of God, not as God was in his native form, wow, you say, gee, I'm becoming more one with everything, and I'm becoming one with my Creator. Well, I'm creating more of myself individually. Some people fear that. Well, if I do everything you say, I'll increase my group consciousness, and then my individual one will go away. No, it never goes down. You don't lose individual consciousness because you gain more soul or group consciousness. Never. Doesn't happen that way. It's not a zero sum, they call it, where you got to have less of one to have more of the other. No, it doesn't work that way at all. Your individual consciousness grows fastest when it's in balance with your soul consciousness. You didn't know that. Oh, well, now I'm telling you. Now, how come that's true? Why does the individual consciousness grow fastest when it's in balance with soul consciousness? Because the two together produce an enlightened state to the spirit within us. When spirit becomes enlightened, now we're just kind of moving this a little bit more ahead now. When spirit becomes enlightened, it has the upper hand in the body that it inhabits. It is able to ensure the body does best and more of life in that body. It ensures that the energies are less forceful than they are in most other cases within that body. And it also increases the element of joy and eventually bliss to that person in terms of their perspective of feeling and in their perspective of finding meaning in their life. It is the meaning in life that is so critical to what life is worthy of existing in. Most people don't realize this, and so they think there's no value in joining consciousness to in a balanced state to group consciousness to individual consciousness. But that balanced state produces the highest level of meaning for that person at that time. Why? Because meaning comes from, growing the most of God in everything around you, including yourself, at the same time. That's what meaning comes from. So when you understand that, you can see, wow, is that why you call that book Life's Hidden Meaning? But so, oh, you pick these titles for some reason. Yeah, I guess I must. Okay, so the point is that here is the foundation of the teaching of ageless wisdom, which is what I'm doing. That ultimately people live their lives in ways to seek the most meaning from the life. Nothing is more grueling and punishing than a lifetime with a lack of or virtually no meaning. Those who are evil live a million lifetimes, eventually, a million lifetimes with virtually no meaning. They suffer more than any other human being can ever suffer. But they do so by their own choice, not as a punishment. We can get into that in another time. You can listen to some of my shows on evil, and that's explained in more detail. But for right now, the bottom line here is if we're looking for what's in it for me, well, I know a lot of people are saying that, no matter how much, you don't have to hide that. That's okay. We're still selfish. We're not going to be by nature just overnight saying, oh, yeah, I've got it. I've seen the light. No, you may have seen the light, but it isn't going to control your life. So the first thing to recognize is that meaning, which is the thing that everybody ultimately wants, everybody, even the darkest of dark, want meaning in their life. Meaning comes from balancing the individual part of who we are with our soul part, which we are semi-connected to, but only become more connected as we create more of it in others. We can't grow it in ourselves except by creating more of it in others. So you have to be doing spiritual service, which is how you create it more in others, in order to have more meaning in your life. You won't get it by saying, gee, I'm going to sit around and really work on my consciousness by meditating and going, oh, and switching to back to oh. That will not do it. Nope. And even if you do it on the full moon and howl at the moon all you want, it's not going to give you any more meaning in your life. It's not going to make you any more conscious. And it will build illusion in you into believing that certain behaviors, rituals, are in some way magical and mystically magical to produce the effect without doing the thing you need to do the most, which is what? Help create more consciousness in others. And then you get it more in yourself, resulting in greater and greater levels of meaning in your life. Okay, now I'll tell you about the issue of spirit and why it has this urgency to find meaning in life. Because this is, remember, we're talking about differences between spirit and life. Spirit has a deficiency. Remember I said that a greater part than even our soul, a thing called the monad, basically chooses to give up part of its consciousness, but not all, to spirit. And spirit then is born, you might say, in the atmic or third realm, third, we call it complexity, third in complexity of the dimensions of time and space, the atmic part, for those who are familiar with that word. And when spirit is created, it comes into existence because the monad chooses not to live life itself. It says, I'm going to be a mirror of my creator in the most native of senses. I will stay here in the monadic world realm, and I will instead help create all life below me. I'll do it by creating two things, spirit and energy. And it actually does that, creates spirit and energy. The complex way it does it, I'm not going to go into tonight. If you want, read chapter 4 in Life's Meaning. It's all explained in there. But the reason I can't explain it, it would take about probably half or more the length of a whole show to just get that out. And it's just so complex. It's not worth the time for this evening. But it's worth the time sometime, but just not for this evening. Okay, so these monads, and they're actually called young monads by some people's standards, or the monads of a planetary nature that have yet to fully develop life. What they do is they create spirit and energy that in itself is a part of them, but lacking the wholeness that they have natively in their own thinking. They are intimately connected to God, but they give up part of themselves that will not be so connected to God so it can grow life. Why are monads needed? Why doesn't God just say, oh, skip the monad process. I'll just make life and that'll be it. You know, boom. The problem with that is that it would not grow diversity. Diversity requires that there's a much wider spectrum of both consciousness and spirit and energy. And spirit, again, is thought. So there's a diversity in thought far greater than the monads have. Why is that possible? Well, monads share all their thought together, so they can't have diversity. And they recognize that this won't make the kind of life God wants. They got it. They got the message. So they say, well, we've got to create some kind of thought that has diversity, vast diversity in thought, because it has to use senses or bodies to stimulate its thought and for it to grow. And that is what we call spirit. So it creates the spirit on the spiritual plane or atmic plane. That's the other word for it, the spiritual plane. And then it creates the energy that spirit is going to inhabit, which we call bodies. And all life from that point down has to have spirit and energy. And by definition, things that are alive, so to speak, that don't have spirit and energy aren't fully alive because they don't have sufficient diversity to grow God. So monads are not fully alive. They are like partly alive. They create the necessary ingredients, spirit and energy, for life to diverse itself. And that diversity is so critical to the growth of life in general. Every planet has a unique set of monads, but they're all very similar. And they say, this isn't going to work. We've got to create spirit and energy so that there's going to be a whole diversity of life, and that's exactly what they do. Wonderful beings that they are. Eventually, in this system, and I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I kind of want to talk about this because it connects so well with what I just said. Eventually, human beings become masters or superhuman beings. And eventually, those masters go back to being monads, but diverse monads, for the first time. The diverse monads exist not in the monadic realm, except briefly, but in the logoic, the plane of one with God. And now they've developed God in a whole series as vast as the universe ways of diversity in life. So they know God and they create God in greater diversity in everything they do. God does not statically sit around on some big lounge chair in the sky and just pontificate on life. God is life. Life is God's growth. And life eventually becomes meaning to God, just as God is the meaning to life. They share in that experience. It's a wonderful system. It is so wonderful that I'm not doing justice to it, I think, at this moment, because it's still so big, it's hard to explain it in the simplest of terms of what I'm trying to do. Sometimes complexity may help, but I'm trying to keep it simple. All right. So now we can start seeing that spirit becomes necessary, just as form or energy becomes necessary. Form with its senses, spirit with its consciousness to grow, and with its identity of individuality as well, is absolutely necessary, or we would have a non-diverse life system that pales in its development of God compared to the one that God created, which is the one we have. This is a wondrous system. It's a system of such magnitude and brilliance that if you sit down, and I tried this, I thought, well, look it, I'll try the what is called null hypothesis developmental practice to see if you can falsify a thought. And that was, if I can create a better system, then I must be wrong that God created the one that I'm telling you about. Because I am nowhere near God, so if I can create anything that's better, then that would challenge my very belief in it. So I sat down for a long time, in many sessions, and tried to create a better system than the one that I understand that I'm explaining to you, called the system present in Angel's Wisdom, been around for a very long time, much longer than this earth has been in existence. And I couldn't come close. Nothing. I tried. Even changing the number of types of light or anything else. I tried all kinds of permutations. It all failed. It failed to even come close to the system. I thought if you had more, like I said, of 4/7 or 3/7, let's make it, make it 9/16 and 7/16. Now, try some other kinds of ratios, other kinds of complexities. You know what? As soon as you start working with it, and you should try this. This is a good experiment. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. If you get into some real mathematical problems, if you're mathematically inclined, you'll discover that. Or you get into logic problems of why it won't work. Or if you try to turn it around and say, well, we don't really need that much individuality. Why don't we just start with more consciousness? Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Why don't we have less diversity? There'll be less conflict, less forces. Doesn't work. Now, I can't tell you all the reasons and all the times that I tried this and it doesn't work, because that would be many, many shows. But I will tell you this, that I worked on this for several years at the beginning of my journey in spiritual focus and trying to, before I was teaching, and try to come up with some way of, so to speak, proving the impossible, probably, which is that this system is wrong, what I'm telling you about, and there's a better system. No better system. I couldn't come even close. Most of my systems failed within just a few, we'll say, points of challenge. The whole system failed. This was the only system that no matter what way you go after it, no matter how you attack it, no matter how much evil seems to develop in it, it succeeds and it continues to grow. Now, are there other kinds of systems? Probably. It's just that I couldn't think outside the box I'm in, which is the box of God. So I resigned myself to accepting that I'm not even close to being where God is, a humbling experience. And if this is God's plan, at least a piece of it, not anywhere near the whole thing, it's more than I can create myself. I can't create beyond what I've learned about it. And that, to me, gave me the confidence to believe that this is a system that God could have created. You see what I'm saying? Yes. Okay. Again, let me finish the show. I cut out a few things here. Let's talk about the eventual advantages of the system in spirit and light. Spirit eventually becomes the light. And as it becomes the light, it enlightens the person. Human beings become super beings. They're called masters. What is that condition? The light replaces the senses of the form. The form itself becomes fully enlightened. And when the form becomes fully enlightened, we because remember MC squared, C is light squared. The squared part of light is the atomic part of light. You multiply the atomic speed of light with the speed of light in the physical dimension, but you have to average it for the group. It's a little bit complicated. Anyway, the result is it converts all energy into matter and vice versa. So you can create the physical dimension in this way, and you can create the energy the most of all the way to the atomic dimension by the same process. Less scientifically stated, spirit eventually learns and understands how to create itself the way the monad did. And when it learns how to create itself, it learns how to create itself back into what is called a liberated monad. And it does so. And it works with an energy being that is more conscious than it is eventually. This energy being, some people call it solar angel, which never was a human being. But it eventually joins with what became a master from a human being. And the two join together and become something much greater. Now, where do these energy super beings come from? That's too much for this show tonight. But they exist because energy has its own way of growing, just as spirit does. Even though it seems to us that spirit helps grow energy, energy itself can grow itself, and it has its own method in its own way. Wow. It's just hidden to us until we reach certain levels of consciousness. And so the system is absolutely remarkable in building diversity, in building beings that we call advanced or ascended monads, and they become parts of their creator. They eventually have the experience of living the entire creator's existence, past, present, and in a virtual sense, even future. Future of that particular being moved out to the end of the time of this universe. That's, they actually can do that. And they do it in a way of not interacting so much as absorbing and watching all that they have done, being a manifestation in all other life. They actually experience every bit of life for all time, past, present, and a virtual future. It's amazing. Now, God grows from the actual, not the virtual future of all beings like this, and God has a much greater experience. But even to have just the experience of the individual monad that is advanced is so great, so amazing, such a being, that it's beyond our comprehension of the meaning that you get from that existence. Remember, it's all about meaning. And now you live the meaning of all life, past, present, and future, from your perspective, from the one being's perspective. And at that point, that's a ticket to leave this universe. And by choice, to go to one of several other kinds of universes, which we don't have time to go into tonight. Well, tell me this isn't something. We are all self-created beings, self-actualized beings, that perform everything I say in our own state of creation. No part of it is ever, ever taken from us or even given to us. We must create ourselves. Well, I hope this has been an interesting show, and I hope you understand the differences between spirit and light, and now it has made maybe more sense. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.